This is Omaha Sports Insider with Joe Quinn and Nick Handley. Follow the show on Twitter at AM590 ESPN Radio. Now, here's Joe and Nick.
All right, coming up at the bottom of the hour, we're going to talk to John Niatawa of the Omaha World Herald on the Creighton basketball beat. Big spot for them tonight on the road at Villanova, and they are dealing with some pretty significant injury issues. We'll get you caught up to speed in 30 minutes on that. But Nick, you're a baseball fan. I'm a baseball fan. And I sometimes wake up and question whether Rob Manfred, who's the commissioner of Major League Baseball, is actually a baseball fan or not.
Rob wants to be the cool guy.
He does. And we got hit with this. It was probably late last night. I think Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic had a story out on it late last night. Jeff Passan, MLB reporter for ESPN now, had something on it this morning. The union and Major League Baseball have been meeting to discuss ways to, I use air quotes here, which you can't see, improve the game, right? Pace of play, always a part of this, Nick. And some of the rules that are being proposed that we got wind of today, they're going to be considered. Oh, boy. I mean, I feel like I'm kind of an old-timer when it comes to baseball. Like, I really honestly do. I feel like baseball, to me, is not broken. It doesn't need fixed. Please stop trying to tinker with it. You're not going to, I don't think, recruit any new baseball fans by making these games shorter, quicker, anything like that. It is just people are going to like baseball or they're not going to like baseball. You know, it's just kind of how it goes, I guess. All these things are cyclical. But a couple of the rules proposals that are being talked about. The union is pitching the universal DH again. So you would have DH in both the American League and National League. As a fan of a National League club, I don't like it. I'm a traditionalist. I just feel like there is a certain amount of strategy that goes into the game when you have to have the pitchers hit. I feel like it makes the game complete to me when you have the pitchers hit. If you're a fan of an American League team, you might feel differently because the DH has been in there since the 1970s. But that's one that's being talked about that's probably less controversial than some of the other ones. The one that's being talked about that would really change things, and I mean really change things, making pitchers face a minimum of three batters before you make a pitching change. I mean, that would, think about all of the fallout effects of that. And I get it. I really do. Managers making pitching changes at the end of games does slow things down.
Sure.
It does. But man, you want to talk about years.
Well, talk about the playoffs alone.
Oh my gosh. I just, that one to me is just you're taking it too far. You are trying, I understand you're trying to speed up the game, and that certainly would probably speed up the game, but the cascade of other things it would do, I don't know, man. Maybe I'll warm up to this one. It's so dramatic that maybe I'm just getting kind of that, like,
I don't like
it's just
this.
It's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they actually proposed this kind of thing, but then part of me is like, I can't imagine doing something like that.
Well, let me tell you the two things that I don't mind, because I've seen one of these things work at the minor league level, and that's 20-second pitch clock.
Sure.
And that was one at first that I thought, okay, well, this is fine for minor league baseball. But I didn't notice the clock after a while. I felt that the pitchers and the batters kind of got into the rhythm and really didn't allow it to impact them. I mean, just like anything, once you make the adjustment, it just becomes habit. And I did feel like there at least appeared, even though some of the time shaved off from before they had the pitch clock to after was maybe minimal, it always felt like the game did have a little bit more of a flow. So I don't mind that one. I also don't mind, and mind you, this is a study, but a study to lower the mound. That I don't mind, because when you do look at Major League Baseball mounds and you just look at, I mean, where mounds are in general, the college game and stuff, there might be something to be said about not, I mean, we're not talking about flattening the thing out, but if there is a way to shave off a little bit, you know, how that can add a little bit balance. And it's not all bad for the pitchers. It's not all of a disadvantage for the pitchers, too. There's areas of being able to adapt and having other things work for you as a pitcher. The one on first glance that I don't know how I would be okay with it is that three-batter minimum that you talk about. Because, I mean, think about the short relief situations where you do have a guy come in to get one out. You know, the short relief lefty to get one out. I mean, that in game 102, you may not even care if you're a fan. But let me tell you this. If you are a fan of a team in the postseason and that strategy all of a sudden is no longer an option, you'll notice it. Mm-hmm. And managers will notice it. And I don't think, I mean, this is not to say, okay, now all of a sudden, guy's going to be out of a job. I don't look at it that way, because all of these guys at some point are asked to get more than just one out.
Yeah.
But when it does come down to games that matter, and series that matter, that strategy, in my opinion, is essential. It absolutely is vital in big-time innings. When you talk about sixth, seventh inning of a close game, even the eighth inning before you're getting your setup guy and then your closer in, those moments are huge to make the right decision, to make the right pitch, and to work against that type of, I mean, baseball as we know it, are situations. It's amplified so much when it comes to the major league level in the postseason. That's something to me, I feel, this is what I've always been against when it comes to Rob Manfred and some of these rule changes. Anything that would fundamentally change the game. This is something that I would agree with you on. I feel has been around enough, especially in the modern day era of the bullpen, has been around enough to where I feel that would fundamentally change the game.
Here are some of the rules changes that are being proposed, either by the union or by Major League Baseball. Okay, the three-batter minimum we talked about, universal designated hitter we talked about, a single trade deadline before the All-Star break. So right now we have the non-waiver trade deadline on July 30. You have the waiver trade deadline, which I believe is August 30 or September 1. So now they're talking about combining the two and going before the All-Star break, which would be July 1, I would assume, July 10, I mean, somewhere in that range. 20-second pitch clock, you mentioned. Expansion of rosters to 26 men with a 12-pitcher maximum. Along with that, I've also read that they would not expand the rosters to 40 in September. Instead, they would just go to 28 in September. Draft advantages for winning teams and penalties for losing teams. We'll get back to that one here in a sec. Study to lower the mound, you mentioned, and a rule that would allow two-sport amateurs to sign major league contracts.
The Kyler Murray rule.
The Kyler Murray rule, yeah. Essentially. The draft advantages for winning teams and penalties for losing teams is an interesting one, Nick. I don't know the exact mechanics of that one, but the intent there is to prevent teams from tanking, to prevent teams from trying to hold on to guys in the minor leagues and, you know, hold them down for, you know, it's like, hey, we're not any good anyway. We're going to keep you in the minor leagues to get another year of service. So the winning threshold, it wouldn't be like, you know, you would, over the course of 3 years, you would have to win like 150 games or something like that. You couldn't intentionally tank and keep guys in the minors. I think that's the intent of that one. But I don't know. I look, of these potential changes, the pitch clock, I don't mind. Because it's not like you have a buzzer that goes off with the pitch clock that it's zero.
And,
I mean,
you'll be amazed on how people pick it up fast.
You just
won't
even
notice it.
There will be once or twice in games where you'll see it actually come into play. And it's not like they're going to put it on the TV screen or anything, I don't think. So,
and if you're wondering what happens if you don't come into your set or wind up within that 20-second clock, the batter's awarded a ball.
Yeah, it's not a huge distraction, really, or anything. Expanding rosters to 26 guys, I'm okay with that. I really don't have a huge issue with it, with putting another guy. The draft advantages for winning teams, losing teams, don't know enough about it. Study to lower the mound, I'm with you. Kind of want to see what that would lead to. The two-sport amateurs assigned major league contracts, I mean, we're talking, like, what, two guys?
How many times is that going to really impact?
Every couple of years, I mean,
well,
that's...
Well, the two biggest ones, let's just go ahead and say it, are the three-batter minimum that we talked about, and then the universal designated hitter, which... Interesting enough, and Joe, I don't know where you are in this one, but I'm pretty old school. Like, I will never forget the Kevin Costner speech as Crash Davis when he is he's in Susan Sarandon's house and he talks about how he feels there should be, you know, you should outlaw AstroTurf and the designated hitter. You know, if you're not a baseball purist, basically, then you're okay with the DH. But if you're a baseball purist, you don't like the DH. I will say this. I have no problem with that. I really don't, because I watch – the American League have an advantage where they can roll up a DH, and you create a job for Big Poppy, for instance. Awful, 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 awful defensive player. Terrible. Terrible.
He couldn't play in the National League.
He was awful.
Wouldn't be able to do it.
No question. I don't like the fact that, first of all, we know you're never going to get rid of the DH, but so there is this imbalance. And I know interleague is kind of fun because then you get to see American League pitchers take their hacks. And, of course, in the World Series, you get to see that. I just have never understood why it's not one or the other. Okay, if you want to completely get rid of the DH, then make every pitcher have to swing a bat. If you allow the American League to do it, have a DH, have a guy that's going to make a living. And we talked about guys that can now go into the Hall of Fame based on being a DH, a specialty role. why is the National League not allowed to have that happen? And I do think that that's a disadvantage. So I do feel like, hey, if you're never going to get rid of the DH, then let's go ahead and do a universal DH. I'm actually okay with that.
I would say of the two most controversial ones here, the three-batter minimum and the DH, I would rather see the DH. I still am not going to go so far as to say that I want to see it. I certainly do understand it creates new roster opportunities for guys that are maybe, for, catchers that can't catch anymore, are not going to be good first basemen. I mean, extending their careers. I mean, it creates, in theory, which is why the union is pushing for it, additional opportunities for position players that maybe weren't there before. Right. Maybe you can make a case that, you can rest some guys. Guys will be able to come back, quicker from injury because they don't have to worry about playing the field and stuff like that. So you might have some fresher teams on the National League side. I don't want it. I don't like it, but I would be able to live with it. The three-batter minimum thing for a pitcher, Nick, I mean, that's like saying, all of a sudden we're going to have to say that of every four downs in the NFL, one of them has to be a passing down. Like, you have to throw the ball once every four times.
You're dictating a situation in the game.
Yeah, I don't like that. It's like you have to run the ball once every four plays. Otherwise, you're going to incur a 5-yard penalty. It just seems so stupid to me. And if the point of the rule is we want to make the games faster, the game is not fundamentally broken.
No.
I mean, it's just find ways to market your sport better, find ways to get youth involved in your sport, make it more interesting, but don't feel like you have to change all of the rules just to make the game go by faster. Like, that just, to me, is idiotic. They're not, like, I'm a soccer fan. They're not talking about shortening soccer matches to make them more entertaining for people.
Well,
like,
I mean, they're not...
very thought is, would be... looked at like, oh my God, what are you talking about? Like, that's not the way that you play the game. And, like, you're not a soccer fan.
Yeah,
if I shorten the game to 30 minutes a half, it doesn't make a damn bit of difference
to
you.
Your example is soccer trying to reach someone like me. Guess what? You're never going to reach me.
Never going to happen.
Okay, and that's my biggest issue with Rob Manfred, is he's trying to reach the unreachable demographic, where the first thing people are going to say that are non-baseball fans is, it's too slow and boring. Well, we can change that. And they probably would say this. Well, hey, you know what? Go change it, then talk to me later. Well, once they try to shave time off or do things that would make it flow better, the same people are going to find something else that they don't like about the sport. The bottom line is they're never going to like it. And you're trying to cater to them, thus ignoring your core audience, the ones who continue to pay money. It's not like you're losing the 35, 45, 55-year-old baseball fan. You're not all of a sudden just losing them because the game continues to be slow. No, you're not losing those people. You're trying to bring in the younger group that will never like baseball. And their first real beef with baseball is going to be, it's slow and boring. Well, hey, you know what? That's baseball. And as long as you have these young stars, and as long as, like little things within the game that you don't notice, like a 20-second pitch clock, those types of things, at least up here, to make baseball flow a little bit better. And so, yeah, maybe you will allow people to enjoy your product just a little bit better, but trying to fundamentally change the game. And in this situation, with the three-batter minimum for pitchers, trying to dictate a situation by creating a rule that is just unnecessary, it's another example of Rob Manfred trying to appeal to an unreachable group. I just do not like that. I think that there is something that is completely being dismissed, and that is the people that will always be there as fans, the people that will buy the extra innings package, the people that will pay ticket prices to watch their favorite teams. I just think that this is a bizarre, once again, another idea, wacky idea out there that, you got to look at this, and we got to try to do something when it comes to all these pitching changes. That, to me, is not, I mean, it's almost like Rob Manfred is not like a baseball guy. You know, when you think about that, you think of the strategy, like some of those nerve-wracking moments. Like, maybe it's just me, but I love the chess match that goes on between managers in those situations in the postseason where, okay, we're bringing in this guy to get an out. Okay, how's he going to counter? Is he going to try to bring up a righty to face a righty? You know, how are you going to try to counter this? That, to me, is fun. And to say, well, I'm sorry, once you're in, you got to face the next three batters before you can come out. You're handcuffing what managers can do. What every manager, it's not like one manager does this a lot more than the other. Every one of the managers, you utilize this. And when it comes to postseason baseball, it's just another, I think, more of the element where you can appreciate the strategy. I mean, how many times have we seen managers go through the year and do a fantastic job, but then all of a sudden sort of mismanage that particular situation? And all of a sudden, we're kind of judging them. Like, ooh, good manager, but boy, in the postseason, they did not manage that situation good. Like, that's part of the conversation, and I think it's a valid part of the conversation, and I don't want to see that change.
All right, let's get a few quick calls in here before we take a timeout. This is Mo in Lincoln. Hello, Mo.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, I just wanted to say I'm one of them diehard baseball fans. I'm pushing 70 real hard, and I'm not for any big changes either. But the plain fact in any sport right now is they want to make it faster and more high scoring, and that's basically what those rules do.
Yeah, it's very true, Mo. Do you feel like, I don't know if you have kids or grandkids who are, football fans or hockey fans or whatever. Do you feel like if they change the rules in baseball, it's all of a sudden going to make them baseball fans?
No, it's not. It just isn't.
All I know is everybody I hear, especially younger, is it's just too long. I can't spend that much time.
Yeah.
You know?
I appreciate it, Mo. And that's, I appreciate the call, man. Sorry to cut you off. That's the reason. I know that's the reason.
Yeah.
I kind of think it's a dumb reason.
Yeah, I think there are still things you can do without the 20-second pitch clock is a perfect example of something that you could sneak in there that your average fan is probably not even going to notice after a while. And the players will adjust to it just like that. A lot of them have faced it in minor leagues. They've already gone through it, so they already know how to adjust to it. Those little things like that, subtle things like that, yeah, that's fine. But when you start to actually look at situations where you're going to throw in a new rule to dictate that situation, and now you're going to handcuff managers, you're going to handcuff certain specialty pitchers out of the bullpen and fundamentally change the way you have modern-day bullpen, I'm sorry. It's unnecessary. It really is.
All right, let's get Joe in here real quick. Hello, Joe. How are you?
Fine. There's only one thing that will really speed the game up, and that's very simply, how about putting a one-minute time limit between when you come off the field and when you go on the field, or between innings? Because I'll tell you what kills baseball right now is all the advertisement, and 2.5-3 minutes later you get back to the game.
Appreciate it, Joe. And actually, the last major league game I went to was in Oakland, and they have a clock in between, but I think it's two minutes for a local broadcast game, and I think it goes up to 2.5, if I'm not mistaken.
For National and World Series.
Yeah, for your
postseason.
Sunday night baseball games like that. But it's valid.
What about a one and a half then?
Okay, it is.
Like
instead of
2 minutes, what about 90 seconds?
But look, we're all not stupid here too, right?
You got to have the ad space.
You got to have the advertising space. But I do think that, you go to a ballpark, Nick, and that was the first thing I noticed. It's like, oh my gosh, like they got this clock up there, and I never noticed it before. And then it's like, wow, okay, actually, after about two innings, you don't even notice that it's there, but the pace between innings is better than what it used to be. But it's just like, I have long said, if you want to make sporting events shorter, take some of the damn commercial time out of them. But then again, we can't do that because we've got to make sure everybody makes as much money as humanly possible.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, we're going to get to more calls. A bunch of you guys want to weigh in on this. So Dustin, hang tight. John, hang tight. We'll get to all of your calls coming up next on AM590.
Yes, beat them all. Guys, if you want to weigh in, 402-573-0590, we're going to talk some Creighton basketball in just about 5 minutes with Johnny Atawa. Go to your calls, though, as we're talking some of those proposed Major League Baseball rule changes. Let's go to Sean in Omaha. What's up, Sean?
Hey, well, baseball's kind of slit its own throat as far as the entertainment. They want more scoring and stuff. College baseball took away the good bats, made them go to BB Corps.
Yeah, the BB Corps,
Baseball was no more exciting and popular when PEDs were running rampant.
Yes.
I'm serious.
That's true. It's very true.
I mean, bring them back.
Sean, you're not
You'd
wrong as far as the entertainment.
You'd have the best league around.
Appreciate it, Sean. And
those
look,
sliders
I mean,
would be just a little extra explosive. Those home runs go just a little extra far.
But
you
do
know
you
what,
remember?
Though? The college baseball, though, man, the BB Corps, when I first heard the sound of those, like, are those metal wooden bats?
Yeah,
like,
it's different,
just the sound was so different.
I remember when the debate about performance enhancing drugs was really coming to a head in Major League Baseball, and what should they do? Remember the camp that was like, just make everything legal. Just say. In fact, there were like national sports writers and national sports casters that were like, just make everything legal. Just do it. Just say, if you want to take HGH, do it. If you want to take steroids, do it. I mean, just go. Just completely no holds barred. It's like, well, there's some things out there like really terribly detrimental to your health.
If you're talking about steroids and stuff, I mean, that's, HGH, I don't know the...
Wasn't Cowherd big on the let everybody do HGH train for a long time?
Well,
Wasn't that one of his things?
I mean, HGH is, I don't want to get too... into something that I don't know out of my depth on this, but I know HGH, I mean, you know, use Andy Pettit as an example there. The HGH, a lot of guys were using, you know, older guys, I should say the older guys that were using it were trying to do what Andy Pettit at least claimed that he was doing, and that was try to recover from injuries faster. It's, I think when you look at PEDs and you kind of throw HGH in there, I think people automatically assume that that's a steroid. You know, those are steroids. Those are going to be extremely, you know, hazardous to your heart. And I don't think it has that kind of long-term effects or risk. I mean, all these things are going to have some kind of red flag, sure. But, you know, if you're eliminating steroids, but you're allowing some form of HGH or some kind of, I guess, monitored form of HGH, is it the worst thing? I don't know. I mean, I don't know enough about it. I don't either. I would definitely say don't allow steroids to be in. I mean, that much I know.
The clear, the cream, yeah. Or whatever else these guys are
taking. I don't want to see dudes having heart attacks at, you know, 42 years old.
Ken Caminiti, yeah, dead. I mean, you know.
I mean, even though it's a different sport, you know, Lyle Azedo, you know, one of the great NFL players, Raiders, you know, mm-hmm. I mean. Yeah, that we can all agree is probably bad.
I just, you know, Nick, we got some tweets here. So Nate says, you know, one of the things they could just get rid of the overshift against left-handed batters, or, you know, the shift against right-handed batters too. But I'm just like, you know, that to me is a symptom of guys trying to hit a home run every time they're at the plate. And for generations, when you saw guys saw the shift, they hit to opposite field. Like, it just, to me, is like one of those things where have a little discipline at the plate. Don't feel like you have to either hit a home run or strike out or walk. I mean, you can take a single to the opposite field if it's going to help your team win. I just...
Well, and at one point, there was a point of all of these guys' career that got them to the next level that they could spray. They might be just massive pull hitters, but they could also go Oppo Taco if they needed to. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're not getting to that level if you don't have the ability to at least go middle op at some point. And now it's almost, you know, taken out of the game because of the probably more the emphasis on the offense and trying to be able to crank that inside fastball and be able to hit it a mile. But yeah, I think that should be a skill that's still emphasized. When, okay, if you're going to go massive shift on me, well, watch. I'm going to let the ball travel deeper in the zone, and I'm going to hit it the other way. I'm going to hit it through that shift. I think that is something that is very much disregarded in this day and age of Major League Baseball, which is kind of weird thinking of the skill level of some of these guys. You know, you think about it like a Mike Trout and a Bryce Harper. I know those guys can hit opposite field.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, TJ, you're a bit younger than both Nick and I.
I was gonna say, you want to hear from a youth?
Yeah, let's hear from the youth of America here, TJ. I mean,
speak for the youth.
28. Put the DH in or make a pitcher face, you know, minimum of three batters, is that going to all of a sudden turn you on to Major League Baseball?
So I do not like the proposal of the minimum three batters. I don't like that at all. I still like be able to, like, I think there is drama by creating pitching changes in the
mixed
playoffs.
Match.
I mean, if you're sweating your took us off in a July game and they're doing that, yeah, you might be a little bit more irritated. But if you are watching a postseason game, like, that's part of the drama that I think people are addicted to.
But I would love to go universal DH. A few reasons. One, when you look at the box score from an AL game compared to an NL game, AL is way better. Yeah, now looking like I'm at a tough math quiz, and I don't know what's going on here.
Well, okay, so there's that. The collective batting average of National League pitchers last year was like .112 or something like that. I mean, it was not admittedly very high.
Other reason, if you want your pitcher to bat, you can still put him in the lineup if you want. But there's only been a few pitchers I've been ever excited about watching to hit. Maybe Carlos Zambrano, because he either hit a home run, strike out, or he break the bat over his knee. And then finally, if we go to universal DH, my biggest gripe with Major League Baseball is, it's 162 games. There's 30 teams. You don't play every team throughout the whole season. So if we would go to universal DH, maybe that would lead to being able to play every single team instead of having to watch the Royals play the Tigers, the Twins, the Indians 20 times while they don't play the Royals or the Cubs or the Dodgers or another NL team at all.
Well, and that's part of, I mean, a lot of people's beef with the Indians last year was, well, they're really good in their own division. Their division stinks. But once they'd play the better teams in American League, the record wasn't all that great. I mean, you see that a lot with the other teams when the majority of their success comes in a weaker division and stuff.
I would say that the schedule imbalance in Major League Baseball is something that could potentially be explored. Yeah. Because, I mean, you also have some of these protected, like, rivalries, like the Yankees and Mets will play each other every year. Mm-hmm. The White Sox and the Cubs play each other every year. It's
Indians, Reds always play every year.
Yeah, I mean, they've got some imbalance there where even against compared to teams in your own division, sometimes you're not playing the same schedule. So it is something that I think could be looked at for sure in terms of maybe balancing it out a little bit more, Nick. In fact, I've actually thought long and hard about just get rid of divisions in Major League Baseball and just have several leagues. Get rid of interleague play, have the American League play the American League, nationally play the National League, like they used to do back in like the 1920s. And then the teams that are at the top take the top four, put them in the playoffs or top five, however you want to, top six, make five and six, or you know, top five, make four and five, play for that final spot in a wild card game, and then just seed it out. You know, one plays four, two plays three, and off and away you go. You've all played the same schedules. You've all had the same opportunity.
Our buddy Josh, real quick, tweets at us, says the MLB doesn't market its stars. They don't care about Mike Trout. The people they are trying to reach with these changes won't know about them because they don't like baseball. They don't pay attention to baseball talk, so how would they hear it? He's right. But where, Josh, you're wrong. It's not MLB's fault on Mike Trout, man. Remember Rob Manfred? He said Mike Trout, he doesn't allow himself to be marketed as much as they want to. So according to Rob Manfred, it's Mike Trout's fault.
It's
so
never,
don't forget that.
It's always somebody else's fault.
It's Mike Trout's fault, so let's all blame Mike Trout. Yeah,
that's a good plan. All right, up next, Creighton. Huge spot tonight against Villanova. Injuries all over the place for the Jays. Talk to John Niatawa of the World Herald about Creighton's predicament next on AM 590.
ESPN tomorrow. We got Nebraska in action tonight. We got Creighton in action tonight. Both teams playing a little bit banged up. Creighton losing Marcus Zegarowski indefinitely. We'll find out more about him in about a week as we welcome in John Niatawa talking Jays Villanova. Of course, our conversation with John is brought to you by McGow Law, aggressive trial lawyers in state and federal court. Go to McGowLaw.com. That's McGowUGH Law.com. Johnny, it seems like every time Creighton sort of adjusts to an injury here and there, all of a sudden now they're thrown another one. And is this one, in your opinion, with Zegarowski out, is this kind of another cause for them to sort of reinvent themselves a little bit here?
I guess it kind of depends a little bit. What it does is it forces, most likely, I guess we got to see here how healthy Connor Cashaw and Damian Jefferson are.
All right.
So they practiced this week, but they were limited when they practiced. So if they are able to play against Villanova tonight, they could. They're not expected to play heavy minutes, but maybe their reinsertion back into the lineup allows Creighton to kind of do what it's been doing, which is essentially, for the most part, just working with a four-guard lineup. Mm-hmm. And against Villanova, which will space the floor with usually at least four shooters on the court at the same time. Sometimes even more than that, but usually four, you know, Creighton's will likely choose the counter with four guards to help get out the shooters and also defend the dribble drive. So I don't know if it's going to change a whole lot, just like structurally, if indeed Damian Jefferson and Connor Cashaw are healthy enough to play. But if they're not, then suddenly Creighton has four available guards, so then it'll be forced to go big.
Well, and John, if they are forced to go big, I mean, against a team like Villanova, how do you think that ultimately ends for them?
Well, probably not well. I wouldn't think so. But I don't even know if four guards is going to end well.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I don't know if this Villanova team is rolling at a level that that it hasn't all year. I mean, they're shooting the daylights out of the ball over the last 3 weeks or so. They don't foul. They don't turn it over. They're susceptible and vulnerable a little bit defensively, maybe more so than they've been in the last few years, but they're still going to play really hard, and they're going to be fundamentally sound. So you have to beat them. They're not going to beat themselves. That's usually the theme with Villanova, and that's the case this year. So, I don't know. Because I look at the matchup and I see mismatches all over the place, whether Creighton's going with four guards or whether they're going to put two bigs on the floor at the same time. So it's going to require a complete defensive effort with a lot of discipline, a lot of focus, and a lot of tenacity on Creighton's part.
Looking at this matchup earlier when it was in Omaha and Creighton had that lead at halftime, we're playing pretty well, and just kind of looking for maybe that closeout moment early in the second half. Is this kind of where we started to really see some of the major defensive collapses for Creighton, or was this when we started to see, you know what, there's something about Villanova that's maybe a little bit better than what we had seen earlier?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of both. I don't know. Some of the mistakes that Creighton made weren't all defensive.
Yeah.
Defensive related. They had a couple turnovers and that. I mean, that Villanova had 2 13-0 runs in the first 10 minutes of that second half. And, you know, they were defined by a lot of things, but Creighton's live ball turnovers played a part in it. Creighton's just inability to score and force or allow themselves to get their defense set was part of it. And then, yeah, defensive mistakes, whether it was, I think it was more just a lack of focus or just kind of like letting your guard down just a tad, thinking that maybe this is a moment where you could kind of like take an exhale. But Villanova, when they recognize those moments and they pounce when they notice a team doing that. And so, yeah, I feel like for me, it was kind of eye opening because I wasn't quite sure about what we were going to see from this Villanova team this year and what whether Phil Booth was going to ascend into that sort of lead alpha dog role that was occupied by other players over the last. He's been on these teams that have won championships, but he hasn't had that responsibility, and now he does. And can he handle it? And boy, he handled it really well at Creighton 3 weeks ago, and he's been doing it ever since too. Just making big time plays. I watched the Georgetown game, Villanova and Georgetown on Sunday, and about 7 minutes ago, where it's tied or one possession game, here comes Phil Booth making a drive in the lane for two, and next time down, pull up for three, knocks it in, and Villanova suddenly is in complete control. So, I think it's, you know, to beat Coach McDermott says it all the time, and the players have echoed his thoughts. It's like to beat this team, you really have to be laser sharp with your focus. And if you have any sort of miscue or mistake, Villanova's type of team, led by Phil Booth, a veteran guard, that's going to take advantage of that. So it'll be up to Creighton to really bring its A game today.
Talking to John Niatawa of the Omaha World Herald. John, I feel like all season long we've kind of been looking at the Big East and have kind of settled on Villanova and Marquette as the top two teams in the league this year. But a lot of questions about, you know, who's number three, number four, where does Creighton fit into all of this? I mean, with St. John's going to Marquette and winning last night, does that kind of establish them as the third best team in this league, in your opinion?
Temporarily, yes.
for the moment.
Right, yeah, because I'm not convinced that St. John's is going to keep up this level of play throughout the course of the season because it hasn't played consistent ball all year. Usually it's been kind of in games where you see them hit spurts, hit hot streaks. So I do commend them because they played well at Creighton. They played well at Marquette, obviously. Had the disappointing second half at Duke, but then again, that's going to happen to a lot of teams. But can they bring it against, I don't know, DePaul? Can they bring it against Butler? I guess that's the question. Like, their backs were against the wall a week and a half ago, and they've responded really well, but their backs aren't always going to be against the wall. I mean, they've experienced some success now. How do they handle it? Are they still playing really hard? I mean, the team that I saw in Omaha, I was like, what is this? You know, they're yelling out Creighton's plays, communicating through screens, up in Creighton's the Creighton's ball handlers. Like, they couldn't get the ball into Martin Crumple because they just didn't have passing windows. Those guys were all over the place, taking away the three ball, converging on drivers. Like, there was just as much energy and aggressiveness and effort that I've seen from St. John's when I haven't watched every game, but man, that was really impressive. In Omaha, I thought they carried it to Milwaukee too, but can they carry that throughout the season? That's my question. But I do think Marquette and Villanova are the top two, and I feel like St. John's is in that next tier by itself, but I'm not 100% convinced that it'll stay there. It might just dip down into that next tier with everyone else. So we'll see. But when they're playing well, man, St. John's is really scary. And so, you know, it's fun to watch when they are doing that.
Johnny, I know that was the Villanova-Creighton game, too, was another game where you saw Tyshawn Alexander. He was very effective. But if I remember correctly, didn't he have a lot of three-point attempts in that one, too? Something like either a dozen or more three-point attempts. And the reason I bring that up is when you look at maybe kind of a different look with Zagorowski unavailable, and as you mentioned, some other guys, you know, health in question. You know, does he have to take on even more of a load offensively for them to stay competitive in this one, in your opinion?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know if the responsibility falls on him or if it kind of shifts over to Martin Crumple. Yeah. I mean, Marcus Zagorowski does a good job of setting the teammates up, and he also can hit threes. I mean, he was shooting it before maybe a couple weeks ago, shooting it like a 50% clip from three. So they don't have – they can't replicate that exactly. But, you know, bringing Caleb Joseph off the bench, he's been pretty lethal from outside, and he has the ability to get in the heart of the defense and create. So maybe, you know, Creighton looks to him a little bit more to score. But I do think that the blueprint that the Jays laid out against Xavier, while it doesn't have to be that exaggerated, where they're really forced feeding the ball inside and, you know, they went the first 9 minutes of the game without shooting a three. You know, they probably don't have to go that extreme with it, but playing inside out, I think Creighton's a lot more effective offensively. And so, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, but you're right. I think Tyshawn for sure is at, like, his aggressiveness level, is usually you can usually kind of get a read on it within the first 5 to 7 minutes of a game as to what type of night he's going to have. So I think I would imagine that the coaches have been encouraging him to be aggressive and to take some chances by, you know, driving in the lane and creating offense that way for himself or for others.
It'll be Creighton Villanova tonight, 7 o'clock tip-off game that can be seen on CBSSN. Johnny Ottawa with us as we once again bring you Johnny's appearance for McGow Law, aggressive trial lawyers in state and federal court. Go to McGowLaw.com. That's McGowLaw.com. Johnny, are you out there in Philly?
No. Okay. I'm home here with you guys. Okay. From the tube.
So you're going to be watching it just like all of us. All right, Johnny. Well, enjoy the game tonight. We will talk to you later.
All right. Thanks, guys, for having me on. Appreciate it.
You bet, sir. We're going to talk some Nebraska hoops coming up in about 30 minutes or so. Ken Pavelka, the voice of Husker basketball, going to join us. Of course, 5 o'clock today, we will get you to the pregame coverage of Nebraska and Maryland, a game which, stunningly, Nick, now Nebraska is favored in. I don't get it. I don't understand it, but that is where we are. In fact, we'll try and get you an updated line here in a little bit, but it was all the way up to Nebraska -2.5. Earlier today, it opened in Las Vegas as Nebraska -1 or -1.5, then Nebraska -2, now up to 2.5. It's just...
Oh, the ESPN College Power Index is even more baffling to me. We'll discuss that later.
Yes, we will. Plenty to come on AM590.
ESPN Walk.
So I was watching some of the footage from the Patriots Championship Parade yesterday, which, Nick, you got to give Boston credit. This is like, what, the 12th one of these they've had in the last, what, however many years, and
well, the Red Sox just
they
won
still
two,
had a
so.
Ton. I mean, the Boston Bruins have won one recently. Yep. The Celtics weren't too long ago. I mean, people love it. They show up. Gronkowski was, I thought, fairly measured. I mean,
this really cute moment, too, that I got wind of this morning. I put it up on our AM590ESPNRadio.com OSI section, and it's, I believe Tom Brady's
daughter
is Vivian. Because he says, hi, Vivi, and she has a nickname for him. It's not Gronk, but it's Gronky. And she goes, hi, Gronky. It's really cute. it's like, oh, it's crazy Uncle Gronk. And to Viv, he's Gronky. So that
was cute. You know, he started off, he had a bottle of wine, it looked like, which maybe Gronk's a wine man now. Mm-hmm. Who knows? And then about, halfway through, the shirt came off. One of his teammates ripped his shirt off, actually.
Yeah, the fireball started going down.
Yeah, and then the crowd started throwing him cans of beer, which he actually tossed back at first. Then he ended up wearing a police vest for some reason. Looked like, I don't know, what was going on, and dressed like the Village People or something. And then by the end, he was chugging beers, and he had some Tide Pods that he was throwing out for, again, some unbeknownst reason.
Oh, no, and somebody probably ate
them. Yeah, I mean, that's just the way these things go, Nick. Actually, the funny part is that, not the funny part, but one of the funny parts, this guy tweeted out this video, which has gone viral. In fact, I just saw it on the Lebatard show. Nothing says Boston like a bunch of Pats fans beating the expletive out of each other after a championship parade. And it is literally a bunch of people all wearing, like, Patriots jerseys out in front of a building in a giant fist fight.
Oh, boy.
Probably 10, 15 dudes, and they, I mean, not just like a little pushing, shoving, like brouhaha. I mean, we are talking like a full-on, full swings, get guys on the ground, kick them while they're down type thing. And also in true, you know, I feel like the kind of person who's going to get into a fight at a championship parade is the kind of person that would also, as soon as they realize that it's getting broken up, like the guy puts his hooded sweatshirt on, pulls the hood up over and runs away like as fast as he can. It's like, I can't stick around to, like, you know, jinkies, boys, the cops are coming. We got to get out of here. Let's go. Come on, let's go.
That's, maybe it's just because they're always winning and they're always around each other during these things that you just start getting sick of each other?
Does it infuriate you so much to win? Fans? I mean, is that the sign that maybe it's time for the Patriots dynasty to end is when the fans beat the piss out of each other?
Well, you got
to
fight
beat
somebody.
The living daylights.
And you're always around each other.
Out so of get, each other
yeah,
because...
you just get tired of seeing each other at victory parades where you just got to start fighting each other.
Is it just like, you know, we have to beat on each other because we are so tired
well,
of winning?
Well, because no other fan base can measure up to the Red Sox and the Patriots. And...
We are just so tired of winning that we need to fight each other.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to fight us anymore because we are just so good. So
to be the best, you got to beat the best. So I'm going to fight Johnny over in Charlestown, Mass, because he's the best with the best fan base.
Well, Johnny from Charlestown, Mass got his ass kicked by somebody in this, because there's one dude in this, Nick, who it looks like the guy comes up from behind him, grabs him by the shoulders, and literally rams him into the front of a car.
Like, it probably happened.
I just sit here and I watch this. I'm like, man, like you guys, you're doing this after you win? Like, what happens after you guys lose?
Well,
take the day off work to get into a street fight.
Yeah, maybe they're a lot more, I don't know, emotional, but maybe a little bit more tame. Maybe a little, they have a little bit more perspective on life when they lose.
It's entirely possible.
They contemplate a little bit more.
More
winning just fuels.
Winning is tough, Nick.
Winning
is
fuels
difficult.
The adrenaline that it needs to be unleashed on your fellow fans.
Yes, all this winning is just tough.
Well,
that is very hard.
In a fireball does that too, and you know, I'm sure there's probably a lot of those different fluids that probably also aided into those feelings as well.
Entirely possible. All right, coming up in the next hour, Kent Pavelka, 5 good questions, and Southern Miss football makes a really dumb decision and then makes it even worse. We'll tell you about that next on AM 590.
ESPN Wild.